Welcome to yet another edition of The Two Mics on the Record, the podcast series that just keeps growing and growing and growing. Today's edition, I'm happy to say, has been long awaited because we haven't done this for a while. And it is, of course, Porky Vision, where Mr. Mike Porky Parry tells you about the shows he's been watching on TV, whether they're worth watching, and what's going to happen in there. Hey, Porky.
Yes.
Do you ever read The Economist?
I do read The Economist. I love The Economist.
Do you?
Yeah.
Why do you love The Economist?
I love The Economist because it's more than just economics and finance. You think, wow, it's all business. Mm. It's not. It's a fantastic magazine which encompasses the whole of the things in society you want to know about, including, by the way, a TV review, Line of Duty.
Well, it's got the science, it's got the technology, it's got the arts, it's got the environment, but it also sifts through the noise, focusing on the essential information that tells the real story at a time, and this is very true, when facts matter more than ever.
Well, they certainly do. It's been going, you know, for about a whole, over 170 years.
Has it?
It's for the kind of person who never stops questioning and who wants to know why the world is the way it is. It is the smart guide to the forces impacting on our world.
It is absolutely right. And what I've seen this week as well is a fascinating piece about Mark Zuckerberg, who is, of course, the boss of Facebook.
Exactly.
Because guess what? After he's made billions and gazillions of pounds and dollars out of Facebook and out of social media, he's now decided it's time for governments to actually clamp down on the internet.
I know, but if you look at the piece The Economist have done on that, they say there are intricate ways in which these sort of interpretations can be put into place.
That's right.
Now, also, of course, announced only recently, the Saudis making record profits from their oil industry, hundreds of billions of dollars, puts them way above people like Amazon and all that. And The Economist go into that, examine it in forensic detail, and once again, give us all the answers.
Yes, exactly right. Now, you can get yourself a free print copy right now, and all you've got to do is text the word RECORD, R-E-C-O-R-D, to 78070.
Right, can I tell you, I want to repeat that because I don't want anybody to miss out. For your free print copy of The Economist, just text RECORD, R-E-C-O-R-D, to 78070.
Now, I'm hoping you're not going to tell us about anything that we haven't yet seen, because some people do get upset when you start ruining it for them.
Well, I'm not going to ruin it for anybody, I mean, you know, you've got to keep up and watch these programmes. But the one I'm going to talk about, of course, is the programme of the moment, and that's Line of Duty.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I'm a late convert to Line of Duty.
Right,
because
okay.
Because when it first went out, I never really watched it, you know.
Right.
But I would say, I think it was last year, I discovered it on Netflix.
Yes.
And I started watching it from the beginning.
Right.
And it is brilliant.
Of course it's brilliant.
I really love it.
I think it's absolutely fantastic. Mm. And I discovered it, of course. Now, the point is, with Line of Duty, you've got to be really on the ball to watch it. You really have.
Now, I saw you putting out a tweet to that effect not that long ago.
Yes.
In which you pondered the question.
Yeah.
Am I too thick to follow this?
That's right.
Which, of course, resulted in an awful lot of people saying in the affirmative.
Yeah, they did.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, but I put myself up for that for a fall, didn't I, obviously.
You really did.
But, of course, I'm not too thick to watch it. But I watched the first episode twice, as I always do, to try and get it in. It's written by a guy called Jed Mercurio, who also wrote Bodyguard.
Isn't he the guy who wrote Bodyguard?
Absolutely.
Well, isn't it funny, because a lot of people were being critical of the BBC because they were promoting Line of Duty.
Yes.
As it was written by the author of The Bodyguard. You know, as if, you know, getting it the wrong way round.
That's right.
Line of Duty came before The Bodyguard.
Of course it did, yeah.
You know?
So anyway, what I was going to say to you is that it opens spectacularly where there's a police convoy.
Hang on, I haven't seen it yet.
Hey?
I haven't seen
it yet.
Well,
I can tell you the opening bit because everybody knows the opening bit.
Well, I
there's
don't.
A police well, I'm going to tell you anyway. Because, you know, our millions of listeners who listen to this this Audio Boom podcast have already seen, got past the first episode.
You reckon?
If you haven't caught up, that's your hard luck.
Is it one of those which is now only available on a Sunday night?
Sunday
night? You can't watch it all at once.
No, you can't. No, because it's on the BBC.
You see, the trouble...
9 o'clock on a Sunday night.
Did they not do with Killing Eve? They said that you could watch it all in one go. Do you remember?
Was that on ITV?
No. It was BBC iPlayer.
Is that BBC iPlayer?
So they launched it in such a way that they said if you want to, you can wait for each week's episode, or you can watch the whole thing.
Of course, that's coming back soon, so that'll be brilliant. Killing
Eve.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
I did.
This sweet-faced woman who used to smile while she was killing people, and one of her victims said, are you going to kill me? And she said, yes, I am, darling, but don't worry.
Is that the one where she stuck the needle in his eye?
I think she did, yeah.
That was awful.
And she killed women. She went into people's offices and shot them. She tracked down women in the women's powder room and replaced their original perfume with an absolutely toxic, you know, poison, which they, when they sprayed it around their ears, they died, and all those kind of things.
I thought it was a bit gruesome and grisly.
Well, it was a bit gruesome and grisly, but because it was tongue in cheek, you know, and had some great actresses. There was Eve herself, and there was also.
Was Eve the Asian woman, or is
No.
Eve was the killer, wasn't she?
Eve was the killer. She was the Caucasian woman, I suppose you could call her, couldn't you? You know, but absolutely brilliant, really. Now, so this new one. So there's a police convoy, and all of a sudden, the police convoy gets intercepted by a bunch of guys in balaclavas.
And is the police convoy carrying somebody important?
Well, I'm not going to tell you anything more, you see, if you haven't seen it yet. Was it carrying somebody important, or was it carrying something important, or was somebody involved in the transport of the convoy needing to be taken out?
Was there not an earlier series that had a similar storyline? I'm sure I watched an earlier series of Line of Duty.
No.
Where the same thing happens.
I don't think so.
Or am I thinking about another show?
I think you're thinking about another show.
But there's a guy in a car. They're driving.
Yeah.
And somehow the police convoy again gets intercepted.
Yeah, but police convoy's been intercepted. It's not a new thing. It happened a lot of times in the Sweeney.
Yeah.
Right. You know where the cops would get into the back of the van that was carrying the payroll money, and then when the villains struck and started smashing it up with pickaxe handles. Reagan and Carter would jump out and smash them to fuck, you know?
As the saying goes.
Yes, that's right. In a way that policemen are not allowed to behave these days, so to speak. Also, if you remember, the start of one of the two James Bond films that the worst ever James Bond, Timothy Dalton, did, was a car going down the Miami Keys. Do you remember?
Not really.
Yeah, and they
I remember the Rock of Gibraltar one.
They diverted the van off the road into the Keys, and he escaped underwater. Was the big villain they were transporting to jail? No. A big drugs lord that they got, and then the drugs lord sort of came back into power.
Is that the one where they blew up the road going to the Keys? Is that the one?
I don't remember that. I do remember the van being forced off the road, and then, you know, scuba men came and rescued the arch-villain. Right. But the arch-villain then took his revenge by finding the CIA man who'd put him away and dangling him over a shredder, which then took his legs off.
Right
the way up to his genitalia.
Yes, I remember that.
But
I don't suppose he lived beyond that, did he?
Well, I we don't know what happened to his genitalia, actually, either, because...
I don't want to know about that.
Because he just got married on that day, so it was a bit harsh,
That is very harsh,
yeah. it was harsh,
Well, a man with no legs on the day of his marriage
minus more than just his legs. But
I don't think it matters once you've had your legs mangled,
really,
does it?
No, never really got to find out. But anyway, what I'm saying is that this Line of Duty, now in its fifth series, right... Great actors, Martin Compston, Vicky McClure.
You know Martin Compston's from Glasgow, right?
I did not know he was from Glasgow.
In fact, he was in the Alan Brazil show not long ago. I didn't listen to it because I don't know whether he was speaking with a Scottish accent. But he's a Scotsman.
Yeah. Is he?
And when you see him on Line of Duty, he's got this very sort of London Cockney accent.
Yeah, that's right. He has,
You'd never know, would you?
No, you'd never know. Adrian Dunbar's pretty good. He was the guy.
He's the Irish guy, isn't he? Yeah, I like him.
He was the Irish guy who introduced the world to Frank the Skank.
Was he that guy?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, Adrian Dunbar was the head of the family, but his long lost brother turned up when the wife died.
See, I've never seen that. What was that show again?
It was called Guilty or something?
I never saw that.
Or something like that.
I never saw that.
And Frank the Skank. Just to remind everybody,
was caught having a wank.
Yes, he was. He was. Yeah, because one of the daughters said, "Oh, it's that gay Frank. He's not a nice man. In fact, we always called him when we were kids, Frank the Skank."
That's horrendous. Isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he was actually. You're absolutely right. He was doing things which really should not have been portrayed on family television.
No, exactly.
But anyway, getting back to Porky Vision.
Yeah. So is Line of Duty worth watching then? Is that your...
Oh, absolutely.
Because I saw an awful lot of comments from various people saying, wow, what a fantastic show.
Yes.
La, la, la. I may watch it this week, actually, and catch up.
Well, I had to watch it twice just to get the drift of it all.
Why is it so confusing?
Well, because it moves so rapidly.
Really?
And you have to pick up on the clues. You have to be smarter than the average bear.
Has it got any new characters or all the same characters?
It's got one or two new characters. One of them is a bloke who, I tell you what he's been most famous for up to now. Do you remember the great drama about poor little Rhys Jones, the boy who was shot, the Everton supporter.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And coming home from school training,
something
he was
blue,
courting.
Was it?
Yeah, little boy blue,
little boy blue,
and he was caught in the crossfire between two gangs and took a bullet in the neck, and the poor little lad died. Well, the arch villain now in the new series, right, was the police superintendent in Little Boy Blue, who eventually put Rhys Jones' killers away.
Okay. I don't think I actually saw that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he was very good, and. I'm going to tell you his name, right, because he's one for the future. You know, this guy's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Oh, yeah, you reckon?
Oh, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, without a shadow of a doubt. And his name is, in fact, Stephen Graham.
Graham?
Stephen Graham.
No relation.
No relation to you, obviously.
No.
But and he played like a Scouse copper in that one. And in this one, he plays a... We don't know whether... This is quite interesting, actually. We don't know whether... He's been planted by the cops in the gang of murderous thieves to infiltrate them.
Right.
Or whether he's a cop that's gone bad and joined the thieves. That's not been explained
yet. But
that's
what they're very good at, isn't it? They're very good at kind of casting those kinds of aspersions on various
exactly.
people. And you don't know.
Yeah.
Even when you're talking about Martin Compston, you
that's
don't
right.
know whether he's a good guy or a bad guy because he's always in trouble.
Yes, that's right.
He's always like running up against the wrong end of the stick.
It's true. Seems.
You never quite know, do you?
It's true. Mm. Now, so we've got to keep our eyes on that one. Now, the other one, of course, which I'm very concerned about at the moment, is The Beat.
Oh, yes.
Now,
this is
the one
you talked about last time.
Vertical horizontal refreshment.
Yes.
So vertical refreshment.
Yes.
So a policewoman meets a bloke on a night out with her friends when they're singing karaoke. She's flashing her voluminous breasts around, right, in a tiny pink dress.
Yeah.
Goes outside with a man who's just arrived back off a five-day fishing trip.
Yes.
Goes into a back alley.
You told us about this. Is there more of that kind of behaviour?
Well, yes, because what happens is it turns a bit tragic. So all the, you know, all the vertical...
Rumpy pumpy.
Shagaroony.
Yes.
Is going on. And, of course, she finds out the next day that he's the father of children who've gone missing, and she's on the case because she's an off-duty police officer.
And is that sort of thread followed through the show?
Well, of course it is, because what happens is, you see, that this guy cannot admit to his wife where he was on the night the children went missing.
Yes.
Now, I don't know whether you knew this, but police procedure is such that when children go missing, the first suspects are the parents,
I'm
right?
I'm sure that's true, yes.
And that was the case in Madeleine McCann and all this kind of stuff, okay? Who seemed to get very upset that they were even suspects in the first place, you know? But that's a long, long story, which is still going on. They're running out of money. But anyway, so she... I mean, this policewoman has now become corrupt because she got hold of the CCT from the club where she was at. She put it onto, what do you call it, a fire stick?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
A memory stick.
Memory stick. Mm. Takes it back to the cop shop, plugs it into her screen...
Yeah.
And deletes the bits of her in the club.
Oh, really?
So she's not traceable at
really?
All.
Yeah.
And deletes the bits of him.
Yeah, well, that's obstruction of justice.
Obstruction of justice in a big way.
Tampering with evidence.
So what I don't understand is that it takes a very dramatic turn when she gets a call saying a body's been found on the beach. This is in Morecambe, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Morecambe, which is near Blackpool.
Yes. Yeah.
Morecambe Bay, where there was a tragedy years ago when...
Indeed, the cockle pickers.
Chinese cockle pickers got swept away by the tide, the fast-coming incoming tide. So she has already been very corrupt in this. But then what I don't understand is this. She goes down that night and it's 11 o'clock at night to the beach. They found the body of one of the children because they're twins, a boy and a girl. They found the body of the boy. Her superior officer already on the scene says it's obvious the father did it. The father is a man who was shagging her in the back alley. Okay.
So she doesn't want to admit to that.
She doesn't want to admit to anything.
Right.
So he says, arrest him on a holding charge. Yeah. If you don't, I will. What's your problem?
And has she seen the guy face to face since?
Well, she's been to his house the following morning after the
shagaroony. Was he there?
Yeah, he was there.
And did he see her?
Yes, and they didn't acknowledge each other.
But they knew who each other were.
Oh, yes, yes. It wasn't so dark. They didn't know. They couldn't look each other in the face.
Right.
So, what I can't understand is that she then, on the beach... dramatically arrests this guy, you know, on suspicion of murdering, you know, the name of the child and all that. Gets him back to the cop shop. He undergoes 24 hours of intensive interrogation.
I thought you were going to say something else there.
No, no, no. But not once does he supply the evidence that he was actually having...
He's got an alibi.
Yeah, vertical refreshment with the police officer who's interrogating him on the night of his children disappeared.
Well, it is a bit of a tricky one, isn't it? Because he can't very well give that as an alibi, because his wife will find out, and that'll be the end of his life.
It'll be the end of his life, because he already lost his children.
He might as well confess
his wife.
To any number of other things.
Yeah, but she should have distanced herself from the case in the first place and said to her superior officer...
Didn't she try to, though? I think you told me she tried to do that.
No, she did not. She never once thought about, oh dear, I better get out of this, because, again, you know, she would have been accused of being a woman of loose moral virtue.
She's clearly a bad cop, then.
Well, I think she's a bad cop. She's obviously been married in the past because she had two children... Mm. That's another twist in the plot. She's got a daughter who is very gobby, very mouthy at school,
right.
and she
always in trouble.
I would say the daughter is 13 going on 19.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of those sort of girls, very upfront, you know, short skirts, very arrogantly
cavalier
and flippant to her male schoolmates, you know, who she regards as little boys and all that kind of stuff, you know. And where she got that from, I don't know. She could have got it from her mum. But I'm waiting for the moment. In fact, the moment has come, but I'm not going to reveal it for people who haven't seen it.
And how far along is the beat then? Is it two or three episodes in?
The beat is six in all.
Right.
We've had nearly four now.
Really?
Yeah. So it is something that you're going to have to wait and see with. But, I mean... terrifically captivating, but largely unbelievable.
Right.
And what's more, I'm not sure how you could make a town like Morecambe sound as exciting as it does.
Yes.
Because have you ever been to a bar in Morecambe?
I've never been to Morecambe.
Morecambe is...
partly because whenever I've seen the road to Morecambe, as you go up the M6, you know that you have to drive this long, 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 long road.
And it takes you to Blackpool,
and
eventually.
It takes you to Blackpool, filed coast, right?
Yeah, and then Morecambe. You have to turn right to Morecambe.
And then there's nothing there.
No, there's nothing.
It's like driving to a dead end.
That's right. It is
and
a bit like that.
I've no desire to go there.
It's a bit like that. A mate of mine once, who worked with me on the Chester Chronicle, Chester's a very nice town, he suddenly, I've got a new job. Oh, really? Yeah, I'm going on to an evening. The ambition was always to get off a weekly paper and go on to an evening paper.
Right.
You know,
and
see,
then finally a daily.
And finally a daily. Exactly the way I went. Exactly the route. I worked for the two biggest evening newspapers. Then I worked for the Daily, the Express. You know, I had a glittering career.
Yeah, then it all came tumbling down.
No, it never tumbled down. So this guy's working in Chester.
Yeah.
And I said, I said, congratulations, where are you going? The ambition was always to get to the Liverpool Echo, the Newcastle Evening Chronicle, the Birmingham Mail, or the Manchester Evening News, you know, He said, Barra. I said, what?
Barrow in Furness.
Yeah, Barrow in Furness, which is on a peninsula in the northwest of England.
It's where they make nuclear submarines.
It's where they make nuclear submarines, and that's about all they do in Barrow.
Do you know who's from there?
Go on.
Norman Dixon,
was it? Yeah, your parents' old friend.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I said, Barrow. I said, I remember this guy's name. It was Barry. Barry from Barra. Yeah, and he said, well, it's my hometown.
Mm.
He said, fantastic, it's a dream come true. Got a job as a reporter.
Can't imagine any worse, can you?
No.
Stuck in your old hometown.
On the Barrow in Furness Evening News
like
or something.
It's like me having my greatest ambition to work for the Ham and I.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Which I actually at one point wanted to do.
Hampstead and Highgate Express,
never did get a job there.
Yeah, but he said, it's fantastic, you know. I said, well, there's nothing there.
Mm.
He said, it's an evening paper, just step up. I said, it's not, just step down. I said, because at least you work in Chester, you can go and do a few shifts on the Liverpool Echo.
Chester's a big town.
Big town, you've got
and
the Manchester
city.
Well,
it's a
city, yeah. And to get to Barrow, you have to drive almost up to the Lake Districts, then turn left onto a peninsula, and then come back down again.
Right.
And there is literally nothing there. And Morecambe's a bit like that. The pubs are dreadful.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, this club, they showed policewoman vertical Roger Rooney having, you know, a great night out in this karaoke bar. They don't exist.
No.
It's spit and sawdust in Morecambe.
And what is up there anyway? I mean,
nothing.
What do people do?
It's just lovely. There's a coastline and all that.
Well, it's
a
lovely when
the
sun's
shining. Yeah, that's right.
I imagine that's not very often.
I went to Blackpool once in the winter.
Yeah.
My mate had a TVR sports car and they're built in Blackpool.
Oh, are they?
And he had to take it.
They make a great noise, those cars.
Do they? Yeah, and he had to take
very
it for
deep,
a
sort of throaty
for
noise.
A service, and we went up there in November, and my God, Blackpool in November.
Oh,
I mean,
I bet you the wind coming off that sea.
That's right,
would cut you in half.
And Morecambe's not very far away. Believe me, not a good idea.
So that's two shows that
you've
been seeing.
Yes,
did you see, by the way, and this is apropos of nothing.
Yeah.
But the other week, James Corden was giving an interview to somebody.
Yeah, he says
he said. that chubby people
yeah.
never really
right.
get a good chance of a proper role
yeah.
on television. He says basically yeah. the view is that nobody finds you attractive if you're chubby, so you don't ever get to fall in love and you don't ever get to have sex.
Yeah. What he said was, why don't fat people ever get involved in sex scenes in all these dramas?
Yeah.
Well, the answer to that is obvious. Fat people are not as attractive as well-shaped, thin or medium-sized people who are shapely.
But you might make the argument nowadays that more people are that shape than are the thin shape.
Well, mate, that
so
means...
if we're all about inclusivity, which is what we all are now, right?
No.
Should we not be involving people who are slightly differently shaped...
Not at all.
...in love scenes?
Not at all. No? What it means is that there's a premium even more so now for well-shaped people who are going to become bigger and bigger stars because so many of us now have become fat bastards.
Right.
And unshapely and unseemly.
Yeah, but wouldn't you feel like you were more represented by the acting fraternity if some fat bastard, as you put it, was actually the hero stroke villain of the movie?
No, when I go to see a movie, it's escapism for an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So you don't want Daniel Craig as James Bond to look like, you know, Danny Kelly.
I think that'd be
for want of a better
harsh
word.
On Danny.
Danny's a lovely
funny.
Guy. Danny's a lovely guy.
That could be great. But,
what's that?
Danny Kelly
is James Bond.
He'd be tremendous.
By the way, I've never met a man who knows more about music than Danny Kelly.
I know.
I do shows with him on a Saturday.
He knows so much because he was the editor of the NME, of course. As you
and
know.
Then he was editor of Q, which was a sort of upmarket music magazine as well.
But also, and, he spent so much time with these guys.
Yes,
you know?
He did, yeah.
I mean, I thought I knew quite a lot about music, but I know nothing about him.
He knows, you mention any record, you know, you mention any birthday, you know, Brian Wilson of the, you know, the Beach Boys, he tells you exactly who the backing group were for the Beach Boys and the name of the drummer.
And the guy who played on every one of their albums, but was never named.
That's right, and all this kind of stuff, you know, fantastic. But no, I'm sure Danny won't take offence at that.
He doesn't take offence.
We made a joke about it when we did a show a couple of weeks ago saying, you know, we wouldn't exactly be first in the queue to model a new range of sportswear.
Although
or something
there are
like
lots
that,
of people
you know?
Continually putting out pictures of people they think look like you. There was one at the Portsmouth game the other weekend.
Yes.
They also go and say, oh, look who I found in my local.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people who look
That's
a bit
right.
like you.
Yeah, but.
Not very flattering.
Funny enough, only a couple of weeks ago, it might have been last week. Somebody said, hey, Porky, you know, on Twitter, I saw you walking out of the... and they named a pub in a place called Cheam in Surrey.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, in fact, me.
Was it you?
It was me.
Right. What were you doing in Cheam?
I'd walked there across the Downs.
Oh,
and when I got there... No.
From
Stockbroker Belt, further down, OK? Walk back up, OK?
OK. I'm not sure of the...
It's a lovely country walk through a park.
I'm not sure of the environs.
I wouldn't worry about the environs. But anyway,
have
listen...
Have you been to Sutton lately?
When was I last in Sutton? I can't remember.
This morning?
No. I haven't been there recently, actually, no. Been to Kingswood and places like that. Real quality Surrey, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, with your mate, the former manager of Wales.
Yes, that's right, Chris Coleman.
Yeah, where is Chris Coleman now?
Well,
is he still out of a job?
I'm not sure. No, I think he's got a job somewhere, hasn't he? Oh, I know, it's China, isn't it?
Has he gone to China?
I'm sure, because
he might be right,
because his wife, who's a very attractive lady and the mother of his latest children, posted a load of stuff about settling down to life in China.
All right.
So I think you're right. Now, listen, as this is Porky Vision, we ain't got an awful lot of time left.
Yes.
I want to talk about Alan Partridge, okay?
Alan Partridge, yes.
It was called This Time.
Yes.
With Alan Partridge, right? Now, what happened was, Steve Coogan, of course, is Alan Partridge, right?
Yes.
And what Steve Coogan did, and made no secret of it, was he said, I'm going to make this fantastic series. He hasn't done one for about 10 or 12 years when he was the radio reporter in the Norfolk, okay? Did you ever see that?
I quite liked the original Alan Partridge. Yeah. I thought it was quite funny. But a bit like The Office for me.
Yeah.
And even Gavin and Stacey and all of those very trendy, sort of very hip shows.
Yeah.
I couldn't watch all of them.
No.
You know, it was
a bit
quite
similar.
Liked, I mean, I quite liked the... There were parts of it that I liked. I quite liked the fact that he was such a nerd and also a bit of an arsehole. I quite liked the Geordie guy who kept popping up and said, oh, Alan, do you fancy having a drink? You know, and he was really simple.
Yes.
And I mean, but I couldn't watch loads of it one after another. Do you know what I mean?
I think I saw the film he made. I think he made a film,
didn't
he?
He did make a film, yeah.
Where he got taken hostage. The station was hijacked and some bloke tied a shotgun to his neck and all this kind of stuff.
I mean, there are lots of people in the radio business who absolutely love it
and
think it's brilliantly kind of put together because it actually is...
Yeah.
true to form. I mean, there are people who say as well that he based the character and the voice on Beaky, Graham Beecroft.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
The Beaky came out with some, you know how he is. He comes out with some sort of rather obvious statements.
That's
nothing against Beaky.
No, of course you do, yeah.
But apparently, supposedly, Steve Coogan heard him on TalkSport.
Right.
And said, I'm going to
base the whole character on him.
Base a character on Beaky.
Well, anyway, what he did in his latest incarnation was invent this show called This Time, right? Yeah. And it was him and a woman who looked very much like the person that works with Piers Morgan, Susanna Reid.
Yes.
On a couch, and he was the intention was to take the mickey out of on-the-couch type shows,
right.
Either Piers Morgan and Susanna Reid,
right.
Or The One Show,
yes.
With Alex Jones,
yes.
And whoever
and
the guy is
bloke.
Who works with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody thought it would be hilariously funny, but in fact it wasn't. And in fact, he should have left it alone. Mm. It's a bit like if John Cleese, you know, the curmudgeon that he is,
yeah.
If he brought back Fawlty Towers,
yes.
It'd be a disaster, you know
be.
What I mean?
It would be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the things I've never actually forgiven John Cleese for doing
is
reenacting the scene where he hits his car with the twig.
Yes, that's right,
He made it into an advert.
An advert, no.
And that's ridiculous to me.
I mean,
I know he's always moaning about how he needs the money because his ex-wives are always taking all his
money.
That's
right, yeah.
Well, he should get a better lawyer.
Yeah, he should, yeah.
He shouldn't be, prostituting
or invent something
like
new. But you're absolutely right. The lasting memory now is of that ridiculous view where the two cops in the car look up at him and wonder what's this nutter doing smashing the car. There were no cops involved in the first one.
No.
He thrashed his Morris 1100
because
the engine had broken down.
Yes, and it was that great episode where he was trying to bring the duck from the other restaurant.
Which turned out to be
a pâté or something.
Blancmange, that's right. Yeah, something like that. So anyway, Alan Partridge does. I watched the first one and I made sure that I recorded it so I could see it in leisure time, my own time.
Yes.
And it was hideous in the sense that I didn't listen to a new joke that I hadn't heard before. There were no physical, sort of activities
right.
that made it look good. He tried to do how are you getting in and out of a train at loo
right.
without touching anything because
right.
there's so many germs there.
Right.
Use your elbows and use your knee to lift the loo seat and all that kind of stuff. Did all these. It just didn't work.
No.
And from the first show to the last, I think there were six episodes. The audience halved.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it sort of went down by a third between episodes one and two.
Right.
And then kept falling away. But the point is, at the same time all that's happening, old Piers Morgan, who he apparently they have a problem.
Yes.
They have a problem.
Well, most people who have been anything to do with newspapers have a problem with Steve Coogan. Because Steve Coogan and Hugh Grant are both members of Hacked Off, which is that organisation
which
is bankrolled effectively by Max Mosley
and
various other ne'er-do-wells.
Absolutely.
Who would like to see newspapers shut down.
Yes, they would,
And so all newspapers.
Or brought
people,
under state control.
Including me.
Yes.
And you, probably.
Yeah.
Are not that keen on those guys.
No, we're not keen on those guys at all. But Piers has been revelling in it. Piers does a column in the Mail on Sunday TV magazine each week, event.
Right.
And he has gloried in the figures slipping from one episode to another.
Right.
And finally, said Steve Coogan should pack it in, give it up, and it's not funny. And that's the way it's been greeted. Now, funny,
there are others as well who have written about this in the past, sort of other TV critics, who have basically said that Piers Morgan and Susanna Reid have out-Partridge.
That's right.
And actually, they're so good at what they do that he can't even possibly mock them and be better.
After the last episode, I read the Monday morning's reviews in a national newspaper. That was a couple of weeks ago. Can't remember which one it was. The Times, maybe, or the Mail or something like that. And it said that when you see Piers now in full flow, who gets stuck into people, he's often seen eating his breakfast full on camera and berates the cameraman for focusing on him eating his breakfast, going, go to an advertising break or something like that. It is like watching Steve Coogan.
Yeah.
But it's real. And that Piers Morgan show is getting record figures.
Yeah.
I don't mean in comparison with BBC Breakfast.
Well, they're going down and he's going up.
Yeah, though, definitely.
There's still a big gap between them.
Definitely, but they're putting on figures. A very good show. I like it. I watch it every morning. When Piers is there, but not so much when he's not.
No.
But the point of my story...
That's a very interesting point you make, because it's not the show.
No, it's not.
It's him.
No, it's not.
But also, I don't think she's on it when he's not on it either, is she?
Then
they change it around to that Derek Draper's missus.
Derek, yeah, Kate Garraway.
Kate Garraway.
Yeah, and the other girl who's very nice. Yeah. We talked about earlier. She was in
Charlotte.
That other show. Charlotte.
Charlotte's still there. But I think Susanna and Piers only work together.
I think you might be right, although I can't understand why Susanna would agree to a three-day week, just because
well,
Piers
is... Well, it's a four-day week, isn't it?
No, Monday, Thursday. Tuesday, Wednesday. Piers does Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Thursday.
Well, he doesn't now. He does Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
And you're absolutely right. When they bring in somebody like...
Richard Madeley gets it
That's right, Richard Madeley occasionally.
Yeah. And but he's another one who they've also said is out Partridge.
That's right.
Because, I mean, he's a guy who... Yeah. I mean, when he was... the last time I saw him on it...
Yeah.
Do you remember that awful woman, the Cambridge Brexit woman?
Yes.
Who's the professor.
Yes.
Who continually parades around naked.
That's right, yeah.
In a rather unseemly way. She's not the world's most attractive looking woman.
No, she's not.
I'm sorry to bring that in.
Yeah.
But she appeared on the show and sat there naked, right?
Yeah.
And she's got things written on her breasts.
That's right, yeah.
And in other parts of her body.
And they pixelated that out. Yeah.
And they pixelated it out, but Madeley sitting there interviewing her, just staring at them.
Yeah. That's right,
at her top.
That's right,
the top part of her body. Not staring at her face.
No.
And then he's kind of looking at her and he goes, who did the writing?
Yeah.
And it was such a Partridge-like thing to say.
That's right.
That he wanted to know who'd written on her breasts.
Yeah, yeah.
It was bizarre.
And Jeremy Kyle does it sometimes. I think Jeremy's very good.
Yes, he is.
You know, and he comes in. But the flow of Piers, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I don't think then can be supplanted by another presenter.
No.
Like Jeremy, who's got his own very distinctive style,
no,
you know what I mean?
Right. It's a different show.
But anyway, that's by the by. Yeah. The point I was going to make is that when Piers gets a grudge with somebody, the grudge stays. And I remember a week and a half ago, they do a trail. This is, of course, Porky Vision, so it's all about television.
Yeah.
They do a trail 10 minutes from the end of Piers's show, which ends at 8:30.
Right.
It ends very early.
Yeah.
Starts at 6 and ends at 8:30. The BBC one goes on till 9:15.
Mm. But you see, I think that's too long.
Yeah.
Because if you're a parent
taking
your kids to school, you can't watch it until
9:15. No,
if
I agree.
If you're going to work,
it's
a pretty good chance you're out of the house before 9:00.
Yes, I agree, yeah.
So why bother?
Yeah. But anyway, what happens is they throw to Lorraine, right, you know, who is a national treasure.
She
you
is.
Know, you know, I had to let Lorraine go when we first got to talk radio.
When you say had to let her go, you mean you fired her?
Well, I don't like to use that expression because the deal we came to was she said, it's very important that I can... my message will go out from here that I'm leaving talk radio.
Yes.
I said, that's perfectly fine with me.
Yes.
So there was not a question of her being fired. She chose to leave, okay?
Right.
And it was her decision.
It
was her decision. Her decision.
Yeah.
And
she's a nice woman, though.
She's a very nice woman.
I used to know her a little bit in Scotland.
Yes, that's right.
She was around at a lot of the stuff that you know, sort of black tie.
Yeah, sure. And so what happened was, in the handover, she said, we've got some wonderful guests today, including the lovely Les Dennis, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So Piers says, Les Dennis? Yeah? Well, tell you what. Tell him he's never coming on my show. She said, Piers, what's wrong with you? She said, Les Dennis? She said, when I was head of the Mirror, right? When I was head of the Mirror, Les Dennis was in the jungle. He said he was a raving nutter, sitting in a chicken coop talking to chickens and passing wind all the time. He said it was a disgrace. Put out on the front page of the Mirror because he was wallowing in his own misery.
Wasn't that also the...
It's when his marriage had gone...
Well, yeah, but was it not the Mirror that actually broke the story that Amanda Holden was shacked up with Neil...
Morrissey. Neil Morrissey, the man
and,
from Men Behaving Badly.
Very little, but going from the bedroom to the bathroom.
Well...
And having baths together.
Well...
And having a lot of sex in the bedroom.
I don't know.
And elsewhere.
I can't comment on that. But anyway, what happened was Piers had found out that one of his producers some time back had asked Les Dennis to come on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And Les Dennis had said, I'm not coming on a day when Piers Morgan's in charge. I'll come on another day.
That's why I think that it was Piers that broke the story.
Right, okay, yeah, that's right. And anyway, so Piers gave it full face on, right, just a week and a half ago, saying... Oh, and Lorraine, pass a message on to Les Dennis, will you? Tell him he's exiled himself from the show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I'm here.
Yeah.
But let me tell him this. Sunshine, you're not welcome on this show Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, okay?
Oh, really?
You don't want to come and talk to me. I don't want to talk to you. You're off the show all
so
week.
So he's running the whole show now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that was very obvious,
that's
you know.
Very interesting.
It is.
Isn't it? And I mean,
isn't
this is a guy who's become more and more powerful in TV.
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely.
Having started out as a bit of a sort of newcomer, really.
Well.
Having been given the first sort of job with Simon Cowell.
Well, I mean,
Britain's Got Talent.
Running the Mirror. and having to get cozy to Simon Cowell, because Simon Cowell was handling tremendous amounts of talent.
But you know, the great thing
days.
About Simon Cowell is that the reason they're so close is because Piers helped him out when Simon Cowell was nowhere.
Yes.
Back on the day when Piers ran Bizarre on the Sun.
That's right.
And he basically helped Simon Cowell
out.
Yeah,
sure.
And Cowell's never forgotten it.
Yeah, well,
I mean, that's what we all need,
helps
it?
Each other.
A millionaire friend.
I think Piers and Alan Sugar helped each other in various ways to promote Alan Sugar's businesses and that kind of stuff, you know, when he started a business page. And, you know, if you get yourself into a situation like that and handle it properly, it's to everybody's advantage.
Exactly right. Mm. We're the Two Mics. This is On The Record.
The Archville then took his revenge by finding the CIA man who'd put him away and dangling him over a shredder, which then took his legs off.
Oh,
right.
Yes,
the way,
I remember that.
Right the way up to his genitalia.
Yes, I remember that.
But
I don't suppose he lived beyond that, did he?
Well, we don't know what happened to his genitalia, actually, either, because...
I don't want to know about that.
Because he just got married on that day, so
really?
It's a bit harsh, yeah.
That is very harsh.
Yeah, it was harsh,
well,
yeah.
A man with no legs on the day of his marriage.
Well,
not
he
the
might have been minus more than just his legs, but
well,
we...
Well, I don't think it matters once you've had your legs
never
mangled,
really,
does it?
No, no, never really got to find out. Len Dennis, so when I was under the mirror, right? When I was under the mirror, Les Dennis was in the jungle. He said he was a raving nutter, sitting in a chicken coop talking to chickens and passing wind all the time. He said it was a disgrace. Put out on the front page of the Mirror because he was wallowing in his own misery.
Wasn't that also the...
It's when his marriage had gone...
Well, yeah, but was it not the Mirror that actually broke the story that Amanda Holden was shacked up with Neil...
Morrissey. Neil Morrissey, the man from Men Behaving Badly.
Very little, but going from the bedroom to the bathroom.
Well...
And having baths together.
Well...
And having a lot of sex in the bedroom.
I don't know.
And elsewhere.
I can't comment on that. But anyway... Frank the Skank, just to remind everybody...
was cool having a wank.
Yes, he was, yeah. Because one of the daughters said, oh, it's that gay Frank, he's not a nice man. Fat people are not as attractive as well-shaped, thin or medium-sized people who are shapely.